Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
What's up, everybody? It's another Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show with Haley and Sean. Max is on assignment. He's ditched us again this week. So we've brought in our friend Dom this week. Dom, you're not a backup plan, but it's really great to have you here as the like number two. It's great.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Whoa. You're not a backup plan, but you're a number two. What would you say a number two is?
Seems like it's a backup situation. That's not came out of your mouth. I'm still not the starter.
He's the 1B option.
No one was thinking that except for you. And now we're all thinking it, unfortunately, that I'm the backup plan. Nice way to feel welcomed on the show.
Backup Max.
You're my number one.
That's a good role to have.
Thank you, Sean.
Let me just remind everyone that when the idea was pitched to Dom 3 years ago about doing a podcast with me, he said every week, no, I don't think I can do that.
I didn't know Sean was involved.
Yeah. And then he finds out that it would have been me and Sean. He was like, oh, well, I would have done that.
Yeah,
so how am I supposed to feel?
That part would have been fine. when this was pitched to me, I thought you were sick. I actually thought it was just going to be me and Sean. That's why I agreed. I thought it was just going to be a little boys hangout. Yeah. And now you're here and it's like,
we're due for one of those.
Yeah. I have been on the IR, but I am trying to be a good teammate. Mm-hmm. And I'm showing up and I'm just going to lob you guys up to talk for the next 45 minutes and not do much. So it really will be like a boys hang. And everyone who hates the sound of my voice is going to have a great time. It's going to be a really good episode for everybody involved.
They might have already turned it off.
Yeah, I probably should just let Sean take the reins on this one. but there's 3 weeks left in the season, which is crazy, but also not, because the season is so long that it's like, how are we still doing this? Baseball starting today and the NHL is on game like 65 or whatever. The Western playoff race is pretty much locked up. Nobody wants to make the wild card in the East. And so this week we're going to go over our dark horse contenders for the Stanley Cup since the season's almost wrapped up. Before we get to the dark horse picks, we need to establish the contenders. So we went through with Dom, two from each division. So in the Pacific, Edmonton and Vegas, in the Central, Colorado, Dallas, the Metro, the Rangers and the Canes, the Atlantic, Florida and Boston. There's not much debate here except for the Pacific choices. Dom, why is Vegas a contender over Vancouver, who has a 12-point lead in the standings as of Thursday morning?
Yeah, as most people will know, I don't care too much about the standings, and this is less to do with...
I thought you were... I'm sorry. That could have gone in a wildly different way. I don't care for the Vancouver Canucks.
And then they just start barking.
Honestly, where
over
I thought
here.
It was going.
the dogs are keep it in check.
Is now the time to fight? Ocean, Ruby, figure it out. Thank you. This should stay on the podcast.
I think. Absolutely. Don't cut this out.
You've got a real Michael Vick situation over there.
Sean, that is not funny. He would never. It's just funny that Ruby spends most of her days like laying in the bathroom because she's like 11. And now she's like, I'm going to create such a toxic environment.
I closed the bathroom because she was being so antisocial. And now she decided to be too social in the morning. Anyways, back to the Vancouver Canucks. Nothing against the Canucks, who I
think against the Canucks.
Maybe a little something. It's just that I think Edmonton and Vegas are so strong. I would probably take the Canucks over the Bruins, maybe even the Rangers as well. Like if they were in the East, they'd be a contender for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just that the West is so tough, and especially their division. With Vegas, it's a big thing about who they've added at the deadline, with Hanifin, who's been amazing so far, and Thomas Hertl, who hasn't even played yet, and I think will make a big impact come playoff time. So if you're trying to set a hierarchy in the Pacific before the deadline, I think Edmonton and Vancouver is the picks because Vegas wasn't playing that well. Now, with the additions Vegas has made, I think they are a stronger team than Vancouver on paper.
Well, me and McAnew talked about this on Wednesday. We're at a point now where I think a lot of people look at the Predators, and we're going to talk about them in detail later on. But you see the standings, and it's like, what exactly is going on with Vegas? I know they're playing better and all that, but there's still, to me, there's a little bit too much projection there. Like where you're like, okay, if Hurdle comes back, cool. If Hanifin gets fully integrated, cool. And you can see why they have that kind of that sheen on them. But at the same time, it's just like I'm starting to get nervous about them. It might just be me being a coward. They're not. But I just there's some projection there before. Like I 86 points versus 98 points is, and I know I'm trying not to be a standings guy here because I'm typically not, mm-hmm. but that it feels like a coin flip to me,
right?
In a lot of ways, and which is, you know, coin came up Vegas on Dom's side of things. That's fine.
I guess the way to look at it too, it kind of brings into context. I know the Canucks like did some of their wheeling and dealing well before the deadline in terms of bringing in Zadorov and trading for Elias Lindholm, but they didn't. They weren't active like at the deadline. And I know that was something Canucks fans were disappointed in, is like, why didn't they do more on the day, especially when you saw the way that the rest of the West was beefing up? And it's not to say that Zadorov and Lindholm haven't been good additions to the lineup, but I do think when you look at Vancouver and Vegas and what those teams did to get better at the deadline, like we can objectively look at Vegas and say that roster got better, as Dom said. And I think when you put into perspective as well that Vegas won the Stanley Cup last year, and if Vegas is going to stay in wild card two and the Canucks are going to stay in Pacific number one, like, is there a world in which those two play in the first round of the playoffs and Vegas wins? Like, can you see that happening? And I think that's maybe what makes mm-hmm. Vegas the contender and Vancouver the dark horse, because most people are going to put their money on the team that beefed up more and won the Stanley Cup last year.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
If that's the first round series, like Vancouver is opening as the underdog in that series in the eyes of the public.
This is like, honestly, exactly. I can't remember if I talked about this with Drance or McIndoo now, because I've had the same conversation twice in the last like 48 hours. That framing is to me like almost the best argument for.
Thank you.
For who is the favorite and who is the dark horse in that, because that's completely true. If April 20th rolls around and we end up getting Vegas versus Vancouver, like, no doubt that betting odds at least are going to be on, the lines are going to favor Vegas for sure. So that's fine. I'm just trying to head off the angry Canucks fans at the pass, because that's what I feel like I do most weeks here. I'm not trying to be a Vancouver apologist. I get the logic.
But I think even Canucks fans would be worried about that first round matchup. Like, that's, you would rather play the Preds. Like, that would be the better situation.
My only
right?
point
if you're
is
looking
that
at a wild card totally. Team.
My only point is like a big reason that we like them so much is that we look at what they are on paper, and we're like, Mark Stone's going to come back and he's going to be fine, and Hurdle's going to be ready to roll, and he's going to be integrated into the lineup the way that he needs to be, which that could all, I mean, that's probably more likely than not if we're being honest about it. But that's still just like, that's enough projection to make me feel a little bit squishy about saying, you know, about picking Vegas over Vancouver.
Okay. I think it's interesting because, and not to be like the Vegas apologist, because no one wants to do that. But I think even without Mark Stone and without Hurdle, in that lineup. They still have Jack Eichel as the 1C and Noah Hanifin and Shea Theodore. Like, they've got an unbelievable blue line. Their goaltending's been fine, and they've got Jack Eichel. So, like, they've got
40 goal march or so.
Yeah, right. So they can withstand some of that. And I know they're only in wild card two, so maybe they're not withstanding it in a great way. But I still think I think most of this comes from me thinking that the Golden Knights are scary. Like, they're the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bogeyman? How do you say that as an American? Boogeyman.
Back to the
Dom, how do you say that? How do you say that?
Bogeyman?
Boogeyman.
Okay, Pokemon.
Pokemon cards.
Sean and Max make fun of the way I say, like, booger.
Booger.
It's booger. She's wrong.
Oh, no.
We're not going into this again.
This is not a Canada thing. This is a Haley thing.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Oh dear. Anyways, so those are the contenders.
I did. I wanted to ask about the Rangers, though, specifically. Like, where have you changed? Because they're an interesting team, and Dom and I have gone back and forth on them collectively, individually, in conversations that we've had about for power rankings, really throughout the season. Like, where are you at on them relative to, like, 3 weeks ago? Let's say on March 6th, like the day before the deadline. Like, how stuff changed?
Like, I feel like a lot of Rangers, I don't know if our power rankings were on some Rangers forum, but the amount of messages we got over the last week was, oh, not even Rangers in the top five. And again, we're not standings people. If the Rangers play a series against the Canes, again, I think they're underdogs. And they might be the third or fourth best team in the East, depending on how you feel about Boston. I don't think they're better than Florida, so they're number three. And with how strong the West is, there's a lot of teams that push them down outside that top five. And I think with how strong Shesterkin has been since probably New Year's, it brings back the formula that is tried and true to them, which is elite special teams, elite goaltending. That's enough to win. It's just I don't think it's enough to be the team to beat, or a top five team, with how strong all these other teams are at controlling play at 5-on-5. And some of them have similarly good goaltending. Some of them have similarly strong special teams. I get that the Rangers are tops in the league right now by points, but I just don't see it.
I mean, you're still also calling them
a
favorite. Like you have them top two in a division that's got three really good teams in it. So I don't know.
Who was going to bump them out of the Metro?
No one was bumping them out of the Metro.
No, but what about? I can't count. But still, like, I feel like this is a reaction to, I think, how much we got yelled at last week. You don't hate the Rangers. You just have them as sixth instead of fifth. And that is, like, enough to
they're people, Stanley Cup people contender, not the Stanley Cup favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing, but
nothing wrong with that.
I think if anything, I've soured on the Bruins lately. Enough to think that Rangers might be the third best.
Those forward groups are just paint.
Their top center is Charlie Coyle. Or Pavel Zacha,
depends on what you think.
If the question is who's your top center, has an answer that says it depends, that's bad.
And if it's either Charlie Coyle or Pavel Zacha.
Like, that is never like
this isn't Crosby or Malkin. This isn't Crosby or Malkin in 2016.
It was never it depends. It was always Crosby. It's always McDavid, not Draisaitl. It's always like if it's it depends, you do not have a number one center on a contender. That's the issue with the Bruins, and they have enough strengths elsewhere, but I don't know. I don't think they're a very scary team this year.
Mm-hmm.
Famous last words from someone from Toronto.
I think the
talk to you in 6 weeks, dude.
Damn. So I think the Panthers are the best team in the Atlantic. Like, maybe do we think that they're the best team in the East? I think I would say the Panthers and the Canes are the class of the East right now.
Yeah.
And the Rangers too. But I think what's an interesting omission from our contenders list that we haven't mentioned yet is Toronto. They're not in the contenders list. They're going to be a dark horse. We'll get to them a little bit more in the second segment. But it seems bad for year 8 of the Austin Matthews era / Shanahan for them to be a dark horse and not a true contender.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time it's had to do with their division. They are never the top team in their division, except for that one year where everything went wrong in the playoffs and they lost to the Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, they've usually been second or third. And I mean, they have their big four up front. They have decent defensemen. They just don't have an elite defenseman. Their depth isn't that scary, no matter how good Bobby McMahon has been lately.
It's been great since the jump, brother. That's the start to a Hall of Fame career.
I loved him last year, before he got hurt, and I thought he was great.
He just has such a great name that you just expect greatness, and that's what the Leafs are getting.
Not to sidetrack, but there's a girl who plays for St. Lawrence. I think she has the best hockey name I've seen in women's hockey. Her name's Abby Hustler.
Oh my God! Yeah,
that's unbelievable. Incredible. She was a finalist for the Patty Kazz for Player of the Year, and I'm like, oh,
she's gonna be an MVP finalist soon.
Yeah, name. Well, that's like MVP. That's like Player of the Year.
I mean, the bigs.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry.
Do you guys you think if Abby Hustler makes it to the PWHL and scores 50 goals, will it be because of her last name?
I think so. It's because she hustles.
Abby. Abby Richfather.
Can you not do this again, Sean?
Anyways, I've soured on the Bruins enough to think that them the Leafs is probably close to a coin flip in a playoff series. Then you remember they're the Leafs and they'll probably lose, but on paper, coin flip-ish. You just put coin flips towards Boston in this case, and I don't think either of them are on the same level as the Panthers right now.
All right. Those are our contenders. Anything else, Sean? Anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, we need to have a quick discussion about the Dallas Stars, I think. They're in your contenders group. They're certainly in mine. Love almost everything about them. Blah, blah, blah. We've been gassing them up all year. At some point, though, we need to be a little bit concerned about Jake Oettinger because we're all treating it as, you know, a question of when rather than if. He starts to look a little bit more like the guy that we expected him to look. At some point, this dude's going to need to, you know, get the save percentage above 900, which it's not. He's 83rd in the league in goals saved above expected, which, you know, in fairness to him, he plays a crazy amount, which can affect that. But like, this isn't the season that I don't think certainly any of the three of us expected him to have. And I think we're at the point in the calendar now where it's like, is he going to get the train back on the track, or is he going to be an actual red flag for them, like during the playoffs?
I think he's an actual red flag. Like, I'm looking at their depth chart now, and I have Oettinger at +1. Very, very average, which is not great. Like, he'll be rated as one of the lesser goalies going to the playoffs. It's just that the rest of the team is so good that I think you can paper over his struggles. They're third in points percentage right now, and their goaltending has been so subpar, and they have just added Tanev to solidify their defense. Mm-hmm. Their top four defensively is unreal. Their top nine up front is deeper than any other team. I just think there is so much to love about the Stars, and if their red flag is a guy who's shown he has some playoff clutch ability, then it's not the brightest red flag compared to other teams.
Can you believe that's where we're at in the Dallas Stars lifespan, where now we're like, this is an unbelievably deep team. The red flag might be the goaltender. Like, think of where we were on them 2 years ago, where it's like, this team has one line and one good defenseman, and we're just
in an elite goalie.
Yeah, exactly. We're just gonna hope that Oettinger goes out there and steals one. It's wild.
And I think if we're looking ahead again, I know that if the playoffs started today, thing is not always perfect because there's 3 weeks left of the season. But it's quite interesting because we're looking at a potential matchup against the Nashville Predators if the Preds keep Wild Card 1 and the Stars stay in Central 1. or wild. Yeah, sorry. And UC Saros is a goalie that you would normally say, like, ooh, the Stars could get goalied. But like, Saros hasn't been that guy. I think he's been better over the last few weeks. He had a shutout, against the Red Wings a few days ago. But his last five games, he's been, you know, a 900, 950 save percentage guy, although he was like pretty bad against the Vegas Golden Knights. But like, UC Saros isn't as scary right now as he was in the past either. So I don't know if we're going to, and I don't know if we're looking at that matchup and saying like the Dallas Stars are, a threat to get goalied in the first round. And knock on wood, because UC Saros has shown that he could be that guy. But so is Jake Ottinger. So it's kind of an interesting goalie matchup. And two guys who have shown they can be scary in that way, but haven't really been consistently this season.
I think Saros' body of work is a lot longer than Ottinger's. Like with Ottinger, like he had that amazing playoff run against Calgary where he had one amazing season. And then last year's playoffs, he kind of stunk. Mm-hmm. He stunk all year this year.
Yeah.
Like, it is very possible he's just a
I'm saying this as somebody who picked him to win the Vezina before the season. Like
seems like a strong pick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but that's what I think makes that matchup interesting, is which goalie is going to kind of rise back to their level. And I think history could suggest that Saros is the guy who can do that. He's a 909 save percentage this year. Just a shade under three goals against, 2.75. But yeah, he's historically like a 920 goalie. And he was the boogeyman for the Calgary Flames before they ended up. He was the boogeyman? I don't know. That's just how I say it. The year that the Flames ended up almost getting goalied by Ottinger, like they almost got booted from the playoffs by UC Saros. He was just that good down the stretch that he was like pushing the Flames for a playoff spot almost by himself. So we'll get into the Preds a little bit more in the next segment, because they are, spoiler alert, one of our dark horse contenders. So I'm not worried for the Dallas Stars. I've like just decided that I'm not worried because I've been picking them all year to win the Stanley Cup. And I'm not going to waver. I'm going to be strong. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get into our dark horse contenders here on the Athletic Hockey Show.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back. It's time to get into the dark horse contenders as picked by Dom. So if you have any problems with it, take it up with Dom. Okay.
It's at DOMLUS.
Oh.
No, he's Googling it. He's Googling it. He slowed down.
L-U-S. I know that it's LUSZC. Z Y S.
Okay.
There's another Z there. S Z Y N.
There you go, buddy. Mm-hmm. Great work. Okay. Only took a quick Google.
That's not true.
Nice job. I had Dom as Dom L in my phone for a long time, and once he saw that and was very offended. He was like, seriously, You can't just like put my last name in your phone. No, no. Okay, so our Dark Horse contenders. This was a group effort, although we did have some debate about Vancouver. So we have the Vancouver Canucks, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Winnipeg Jets, LA Kings, Nashville Predators, and Tampa Bay Lightning. Very quickly, guys, no Dark Horse contenders from the Metro. Why is that, Sean? I thought there were three good teams in the Metro.
I've never gotten no sold on a joke like that in my life. It was too deadpan, I guess.
It wasn't deadpan. We were both just like, what?
That's why I bailed on it immediately. It made me feel like a jackass. Yeah, I think the Penguins are good. Okay.
Hey, they're only 9 points out of a playoff spot.
Stop it.
It's like every time the Penguins like get a single point or win, it's like, hey, don't look now, but Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh, I'll look now. Yes.
12 points back. Only looking. 12 points back. They're not mathematically eliminated yet.
Spiritually.
Yeah, beaten down. No teams in the Metro. I'm sorry to the Washington Capitals and the Philadelphia Flyers, but I think we were picking Dark Horse contenders based on like not just teams who are going to. Yeah. Yeah, not just teams who are going to make the playoffs, but teams we think could,
I didn't think
to the cup final.
Who thought the Caps could have like potentially made the playoffs even 3 weeks ago? So I'm done applying logic to them. But yeah,
I hope it's got to end at some point. Really funny.
It'll rule.
I think the fact that it's March 28th and we're talking about not including the Caps and Flyers in the wildcard conversation and not even like acknowledging the Islanders, the Devils, teams that were supposed to be there, and the Penguins, like wildly disappointing seasons for those teams. And then, I mean, the Red Wings are still in and around it. So we'll see what happens there. But even if they make it, this is one of those years where I don't think the wild card two team just needs to get in and we can shake things up, at least when we're talking about the East, right? Like this is not one of those, like, who's that?
Devils.
Oh,
I think Hamilton will be back for the playoffs. I think they played kind of well. Jake Allen seems to be okay. Mm-hmm. If they go on
an upgrade at the very least
and they're 8-1 going to the playoffs, they're probably pretty scary, but I don't think they're going to make it. And I still don't think they'd be have a great shot, but like I think they'd be a little worrying than if they had to face the Red Wings or the Capitals or the
Flyers. And they're 5 points behind Washington.
And Washington has 7-3 in their last 10.
Mm-hmm. Five points behind Washington, and they've also played two more games. They're at 73 games played. Washington at 71. So it's like,
yeah.
You can't discount it, but yeah, you know, it'd been crazy if they traded for Jake Allen in like the middle of February. Can you imagine such a crazy move?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they were asking for it in like December. Devils fans were like, "Please get us a goalie."
It doesn't have to be Markstrom. It can just be someone who knows what they're doing. Lo and behold,
I remember getting shaded 2 years ago by saying the Devils really need to upgrade on Vitek Vanacek, and then people were just like, oh, the Vitek Vanacek who has blah 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 save percentage. I'm like, yeah.
I remember when they that was a trade and sign, I think, with Washington when they acquired him. Because I remember it happening. We were at the draft. Dom, you and I were literally, I think we might have been at the pool in the hotel when it happened. Because I remember going back to my hotel room and being like, this is not going to work, because he was garbage for Washington, especially in the playoffs. He just looked like a dude that didn't have the juice. And here we are, 2024, having that same conversation. Like, whatever, be better.
Yep. Yeah. So I think you're right, Dom. If they make the playoffs, that's a team that could shake it up because they have a ton of skill. I mean, I've been saying it all year on the show. I think Jack Hughes is one of the most fun players to watch in the league. So yeah, the Devils, but there's a huge asterisk there. And the fact that they are 5 points out of the playoff spot and don't have any games in hand, and they need the Caps to start losing.
They need the Caps to play like the team that isn't actually good at anything, which is what they are. In fact, their results don't reflect it, but you never know.
Jeez. Okay. So
bad at everything. Like I'm not holding it against them. I think it's great, but there's nothing that team is particularly good at other than
winning games,
stacking one goal games. Like, good for them.
I just want to bring up that they've been pretty good since they got rid of Joel Edmondson.
So
this is really what the show is. It's just a.
Do you want to start with the Leafs?
Didn't leave out excuse to let Dom grind his axe about Joel Edmondson. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. How about we start with the Leafs? What's the dark horse? Let's just frame these teams this way. Like, what is the case for Toronto, Dom?
The case for Toronto is they have one of the best players in the world, and they have two wingers who are among the best wingers in the world. And that's, in some cases, could be enough. It's never been enough for them in previous playoffs. Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year Matthews has 17 points in 6 games in a playoff series. Who knows? It could happen. Will it happen against Boston? Probably not. Will it happen against Florida? Probably not. Their path is very difficult. And that is usually the issue, is that they are not the top team in their division. And they still aren't. I think their depth is starting to come together a bit more. Domi's been better. Bertuzzi's been better. Bobby McMahon, greatest hockey player of all time.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But okay, the defense is still sketchy. And I do not think what they did at the deadline makes it any less sketchy. Edmondson and Labushkin give them some playoff size, but you now have two guys in the lineup who can't move the puck really at all, really well. And I don't know, it's just everything after Matthews, Marner, Nylander is just a bit scary, I think, to really call them a contender.
I think, the Leafs' problem on D was that they needed more guys who could get the puck out of the zone and transition up to the elite forwards, and then they went out and got two, like, box out big boys. So they still have the same problem. But they've got size.
We love the box out. We love the box out big boys, don't we, folks?
Big boy who can box out.
Pierre,
big body in front of the crease.
Pierre LeBrun just rappelled up to my bedroom and is tapping on the window. Did I hear big boy hockey? Let's go.
Dom, was that just like, you didn't include Tavares in that outside of these top guys? Mm-hmm. Thoughts, reasons? I'm just curious.
I like Tavares a lot more than I think most people in this market do. I think he's still quietly effective. Mm-hmm. He's just not. He's obviously the fourth fiddle now. I think he's a better 2C than still a lot of other teams, but he's not the Tavares we remember watching for the last decade. He is a step slow. He doesn't, like, individually drive play the way he used to. His on-ice numbers are still pretty good, but he's always playing with Nylander or Marner, who are the ones, I think, driving the bus there. Mm-hmm. I just think that they kind of missed their shot with him in his, I guess, peak years as a dominant 1C playing in the 2C role, and now he's just sort of a pretty good 2C, which is not bad. It's just not the competitive advantage they once had with him.
And now the Bruins, Andrew P, Campus Lindholm pairing is going to shut down the second line. And that's why they're going to lose in the first round.
Andrew Peak.
It's going to happen.
I've never heard you laugh like that in my life.
Glee.
Oh my God. It's the first time I've heard Sean like happy. It's crazy. Probably a bad sign that on March 27th, the Leafs are getting shredded by Sheldon Keefe after a 6-3 loss to the New Jersey Devils, who we just discussed as being 5 points out of the playoff spot. And like kind of specifically calling out Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
Not great.
Yeah.
Leafs fan.
It's things aren't great, but as we learned in 2018, sometimes it's the seasons that aren't that great that can produce the Stanley Cup champion you've been waiting a decade for.
That's funny. The spirit. Okay. Oh God. That's like very bleak. Okay. The Vancouver Canucks. We discussed them quite a bit in the first segment, just in the conversation of being a contender versus a dark horse. I think at some point we need to just look at the team that's been among the top in the league all season as a true contender. However, I also understand the arguments we made in the first segment. I made the one too of like, I would probably end up betting for Vegas if they played in the first round just because they won the cup last year and they made XYZ additions at the trade deadline. But the Canucks do have a lot of things that we like as well. Thatcher Demko is on LTIR, which is devastating for me. As the Thatcher Demko owner in fantasy, really bad timing. I'm probably going to lose to Myrtle, which is really devastating because it's Myrtle. Right. But that's what,
that's what did you in is Demko screwed your seeding and now it's screwing your actual playoff matchup.
That's correct. What do we like about the Vancouver Canucks as a Stanley Cup contender or a dark horse contender, I should say? Sean, do you want to start with this one?
High end talent. I mean, that's like, that's always what it is. It's Patterson, it's Hughes, it's, you know, JT Miller. It's the guys who are at the very tippy top for them. That's in a lot of ways, that's the tiebreaker for me.
Yeah.
When it comes to Vegas is that, you know, for a fact that their best guys are going to be, you know, barring they're on track to be in the lineup at the start of the playoffs, which I think is important, and B, they've been their best guys for the duration of this run. So that's kind of that's what makes me give them the edge over Vegas at least.
And you know, what's been really interesting to track this season is, Sean, when you did the like number one center tiers, I noticed there were a lot of people saying like, why is JT Miller not included on this instead of Pettersson? And I think that's like a great problem to have if you're Canucks fans debating like who is actually our 1C. Is it JT Miller, who has, you know, 34 points or 34 goals and 91 points a season, or is it Elias Pettersson, who's, you know, I don't have his stats in front of me, but he's not far behind and he's, you know, the younger kind of highly skilled.
Yeah, and it's nice for Canucks to argue that JT Miller's their number one center, but that's not an argument you're going to get from anybody else. Like, which is fine. Like, he's been great. I think.
I mean, that's not the point. I just mean the fact that they have two like elite centers in that roster.
The fact that they can lose their minds and scream at me and, you know, go ballistic over me saying that Elias Pettersson is the number one C over Miller. Yeah, the fact that they have the latitude to do that is a good sign for them.
Yeah, I think their argument is that Miller does take the tougher minutes over Pettersson, but it's the Crosby Malkin problem where you're taking Pettersson because he's better.
Because he's better.
Just not really an argument. I think that if they have Pettersson, Miller, Lindholm, and Blueger down the middle, that's probably one of the deepest center cores in the league. Just a matter of whether they play Lindholm on the wing or not, and whether he is healthy and capable and all of that. I do wish that his addition brought about the impact that a lot of us expected. On paper, that looked like a fantastic fit for this team. Another like top six caliber player, and he just hasn't looked the part. Nope. It's just been a bit unfortunate in that way, because as good as the Canucks have been this year, as great as their stars have been, I'm still just not really sold on their overall depth, especially after on defense, after Hughes and Hronek. I don't think they have like a legitimate top four guy. You have Cole, Susie, Zadorov, Myers, who you can play in that role, but I wouldn't feel super comfortable, especially if they're going up against a deep Vegas team or an Edmonton team that can throw McDavid or Draisaitl out. I don't know who the second pair is going to be in terms of stopping them. That's my biggest concern with the team. The forward depth, as soon as the bottom six stopped shooting 20%, I think they've been a lot less good.
There's a reason I didn't mention any of those guys, right? Like, that's where the regression that I think a lot of us have anticipated really, really hit hard is on the whatever, Neil Hoglanders of the world. You know, that's just like, those guys just weren't going to shoot 23% for a full season.
I think to their credit, like, since the All-Star break, they've got like a 54% expected goals. Like, they're playing so much better right now. And they no longer need to score on 20% of their shots. They can win by outplaying other teams in a way that they weren't really doing as much in the first half, where we were all crying about progression, mm-hmm. which
PDO.
Yeah. It's not a fundamental part of their game now. They're a legitimately good team. It's just the Pacific has two teams that are a lot scarier.
Mm-hmm. That's like perfectly in character for you that you like Vegas, you like Vancouver now more than you did 2 months ago, even though there was
how many games did they like pump an opponent like 6-2 and Rick Tocchet still like benching guys and yelling at them being like, you need to play better, you know, like I think that was the whole point of Rick Tocchet doing that through the whole first half of the season is like, we're getting the result, but we're not playing the way that we should. So we need to keep working on this. And now like the results are a little bit different, but they're playing better. And I think that's helped them in the long run, as to Dom's point is, you know, they're playing better. They're not maybe killing mm-hmm. guys as much, but like they don't need to. So
yeah,
it's worked out.
When we say they're going to be underdogs in Vegas, it's not like they're going to be like, it's going to be a 60-40 series. Like, it's going to be a tight
series. Be great series. First round matchup if it happens.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. It'd just be definitely one the Canucks would want to avoid. I think they can beat the Preds. They can beat the Kings. It's just Vegas is that one really scary wildcard team.
Yep.
Are we concerned if they don't get Demko back naturally? That's probably a stupid question, but Casey DeSmith's been fine, but you kind of want Demko sooner rather than later.
He'll be back, right?
Yeah, he was put on LTIR retroactive to when he was first hurt.
Mm-hmm. Harmon wrote that up yesterday. He wrote up the LTIR news, and he didn't seem overly concerned. I know that it doesn't change the initial prognosis. Like, it's not like something happened during rehab and now he's going to be out longer. Like,
no, like it was a retroactive LTIR move to bring in some like cap space / roster spot. They called up Arshdeep Bains again, which is a great story that I don't think we've talked about much on this show. I think other days have talked about it. But he's been recalled. I think Lindholm's day to day right now as well. He wasn't on the ice for practice on Wednesday. So yeah, it's not like a concern that he's on LTIR, but there still hasn't really been a great timeline. I think because of LTIR, he's eligible to return on April 6th against the Kings. But we also haven't heard from Rick Tocchet, to my knowledge, that like, yeah, he's going to be back in April or he's going to be back in 2 weeks. So, okay, let's stay in the Western Conference. Winnipeg Jets, they are a dark horse contender. Dom, Sean, Max, and I got into like a heated, we battled over the Jets more so because I think we didn't, it was a debate over, it's because I think there was this conversation again of like, are they just a Connor Hellebuyck team? Sean and I think believe that they are not that mm-hmm. for the first time in a while. Like, this is one of those years where there's more going on for the Winnipeg
Less
Jets.
Less that, yeah.
Right. I have a fever, so don't yell at me, Jets fans. You know I'm on your side. You heard me battle for you last week. So, Dom, what do you think? What do you make about the Winnipeg Jets? You can be it wouldn't be a tiebreaker because Sean and I were 2-1 over Max, but you can help our case or ruin it.
I agree that they're not just a Hellebuyck team. They have a lot of other things going for them. I think they're four lines deep. They have a star defenseman, Josh Morrissey. Their biggest issue is they definitely have the worst top end of mm-hmm. any playoff team. Like, Nashville has Forsberg. He'd be the best player on the Jets. LA has Kopitar. He'd be the best player on the Jets. Mm-hmm. Vancouver, Edmonton, Vegas, Dallas, Colorado, Edmonton. There's no debate with those teams. And as good as Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers, Toffoli are, they are not going to be the best player on the ice in any series they play in the West. And that is their biggest disadvantage. They make up for it in other ways where their third and fourth line might be better or they have the best goalie in the world. But if your top line is already behind the eight ball, it's just a bad place to start. Mm-hmm. Where you're a good team, you can have a good regular season, but come playoff time, those matchups aren't going to be in your favor.
Yeah, I feel like that's the case against, but we still do have them as a dark horse. And I do think this is what maybe boosts Max's case, is that like what makes them that kind of dark horse is they have the best goalie in the league, save for like a Vasilevsky when we're looking at historic numbers, right? But in terms of the West, like Connor Hellebuck is the one that could scare teams, right? And that's what makes Winnipeg maybe a nightmare first round matchup or a second round matchup, however far they go.
Yeah, it's Hellebuck, and like they are a deep team. Their second, third, fourth lines are probably among the best in the West.
Yeah.
And they have Hellebuck. That sometimes can be enough. We've seen teams in the past make it by way of their depth dominating the more top heavy teams. It just depends on what kind of matchup the Jets get and whether Hellebuck is on his A-plus game.
We saw it last year with the Kraken beating the Abs in the first round of the playoffs, right? Could we see that with the Jets? With the NHL starts today, it's Jets Abs. But that's the thing. I don't know if we see this year's Colorado Avalanche team getting upset in the first round of the playoffs.
No, probably not.
Knock on wood, but
could happen, but probably not.
We're looking at Hellebuck versus Georgiev, but again, I don't know. That'll be interesting. Oh, I'm excited for the playoffs in the West. In the East?
They should be pretty good.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We have three more dark horse contenders. We'll be right back.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
We're back. I don't know why I spoke that way. I just kind of leaned into the accent to pretend I did that on purpose instead of just don't know how to speak. Okay, let's go to the LA Kings. We're going to keep it in the West and then we'll round out. We got Kings, Preds, and Lightning left to go. One thing you said, Dom, that was interesting is like Kopitar would be the best player on the Jets. Please explain. And Fiala. So the Kings have that little bit more of a mix of stars and depth.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the vibe we're getting about the Kings here?
Yeah, like the Kings' problem is still that they don't have the star players that the Oilers have or Vegas has. But at least compared to the Jets, they're looking pretty good with Kopitar and Fiala up front. Kempe, Byfield has looked really good as well. And that top line may not put up the same scoring numbers as Scheifele and Connor, but they can play really well at both ends of the ice. They can frustrate opponents. Kopitar is still a Selke caliber defender at age 49 or whatever he is.
Yeah, I don't think I realized how good he'd been this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a guy. He's a classic guy. And this is a cliche, but I think we've taken him for granted in a lot of ways. Like he's got a few seasons in his career. Three or four, let's say, where he was that stand out from the rest. you know, where he was heart, you know, in the heart discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else is like of a type. And this year, despite him being 36 or however old he is now, like it's indistinguishable from this season versus 2014 or 2018 or whatever. Like it across the board, honestly, it's in line with as good as he was 10 years ago or 8 years ago. And I don't think I had quite realized it, that's what we were talking about with him until a couple weeks ago. He's been fantastic.
His two-way impact over his entire career has been so impressive. And I just think to last year, Mitch Marner was a finalist for the Selke and Anze Kopitar was not. And that was like a huge problem in Kingsland, is like, how is this guy not more in the conversation?
I'm still not sure how Marner got nominated, but
it was one of these things where, obviously, but it was one of those things where I had this conversation with somebody in Carolina, and the way that they framed it to me too is like, yeah, Mitch Marner's like playing on the, it's because he was like doing well on the PK basically. And it was like, but at the end of the day with like this big D zone shift in an important game, like who do you want on the ice, Mitch Marner or like Jordan Staal?
Yeah.
Or Anze Kopitar? Like, come on. Like that should be your tiebreaker when we're having this conversation of the Selke, is who would you rather have like in the final minute in the D zone to like make it to the cup final? Like who's picking Marner over Kopitar?
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like I had Staal and probably Kopitar higher than Marner last year. Marner had a great defensive season. He's just, he's not Jordan Staal defensively. I think the thing with the Kings is they have two lines that can work really well defensively because they also have Philip Deneau behind Kopitar, and he plays with Trevor Moore and Kevin Fiala, and that line is unreal, and it may not be the sort of name brand value as some other guys, but those two lines can really drive play and win matchups in a way that's a lot stronger than I guess the reputation would dictate. And that's the big thing with the Kings is they have those guys. Their top four looks really strong as well, and their big issue is they have either Cam Talbot or David Rittich in net, and that is a huge problem.
Big save, Dave.
Oh,
you need a lot of those.
Yeah. Okay, the Nashville Predators. This is one of the, you know, no disrespect to the Jets and the Kings, they're interesting and we have them in dark horse contenders for a reason, but I think the Preds are probably the most interesting dark horse in the Western Conference. Like we had this conversation before we started recording, but like it's just a lot of fun. Like I think we're all just happy that the Preds are good. Like they're a fun team to talk about. Ryan O'Reilly's having a great season. Obviously, we had a bit of a discussion about UC Saros, who, you know, who has a track record of, you know, being a goalie who can steal games, who could have the potential to steal a series. Things have worked really well in Nashville this year. GM Barry Trotz is a lot of fun. Sean, do you have a thought on the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, I'm glad they're at the bottom of the conference. I think this is kind of what you were getting at, right? Like they're the team that rounds out the field to a point where you can, if you squint, you can see everybody kind of with the potential to advance. And we don't feel that way about the East, which we've already gone over. So I'm glad they exist. And Saros, you know, he hasn't maybe been quite as good as we've seen from him in the past, but the track record is really impressive. And also we are again talking about Roman Josi putting up a point per game season potentially as a defenseman. Like he's come on really strong. So yeah, I love what they're bringing to the table. You know, we can call it a bounce back season for Ryan O'Reilly if that's what we want, but also, you know, whatever, Tommy Novak's giving him good time too. Like that's a really interesting group of it's a more interesting group of skaters than we've seen from them in the past. And I think that's where, you know, you mentioned GM Barry Trotz. I think that's kind of where we see him doing his work.
Forsberg has 40 goals. Ryan McDonough has been solid.
Forsberg's healthy. Like that's always the issue. That's been the issue with him like on and off over the last bunch of years. You know, if that dude can consistently stay in the lineup, you know, you're going to get something approaching that level of production from him. And he's been great.
Mm-hmm. He's also part of Haley's terrific team.
Congratulations.
I think good I drafting. Did really, really well in my fantasy draft.
I'm just I'm standing out of the basement, baby. That's all I'm, I think cloaks yeah. behind me. I need to, ooh. It's fine. All good.
Yeah. What do you think about the Preds?
I think we got to give a lot more credit to Andrew Brunette.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the reason Saros struggled, I think, through the first half is getting used to a new system that is more faster paced. But since the U2 concert was canceled, which is a huge part of Predators lore, Saros has a 921 save percentage. He is unreal. Fully back. And if we're talking about down seasons compared to Jake Oettinger, Saros is still in the top 30 for goals saved above expected. He's still, if that's his down season, like we're in a good spot.
I think that I've come to think that, you know, especially when it comes to the, or as it relates to the goalie discussion, in a lot of ways, the sign of an elite goalie is when their down season is still, you know,
pretty good,
passable, yeah. right?
Yeah, like, his down season is he's a 9-10 save percentage guy. Like I think I said that hopefully in the middle segment is like his down season is still, you know, under 3 goals against and a 909 save percentage. Like it's not catastrophic here. It's just, you know, it's 10% lower than what we're expected of him, you know, like
lots of goalies can have the one really good season. Less of them can guard against the bad one. And I think that's kind of, you know, what we're seeing play out in some spots.
Yeah. Preds are fun again. Another, it could be a really fun first round matchup. Pred Stars first round. I think Oettinger, Saros head to head would be really interesting, especially if Saros, as Dom said, has been really good since the U2 concert was canceled. He's been great. Okay, the final team, it's the Tampa Bay Lightning. They've got, I don't know, is he the Hart Trophy favorite? If not, he's just leading the league in scoring. And Nikita Kucherov, they've got Andrei Vasilevsky. What do we like about the Tampa Bay Lightning? Other than those two, I guess.
I like the way Vasilevsky's played for the last 6 games or 8 games. Like, he looks like himself. And that was sort of, I mean, we kind of similar to the discussion we had about Oettinger. Like, at some point, for all Vasilevsky's done, for as good as he's been over the course of his career, at some point you need to say, like, is this one of those seasons where it's just not going to come together?
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar to Saros, you know, that dude that we kept saying, this guy isn't going to be sub 900 for, you know, forever. And I think he's pivoted towards kind of making that stand up, especially over the last 6 or 7 games. He's been great.
Yeah. I love the Duclair pickup. I think he's fit so perfectly with the Lightning. Mm-hmm. It's allowed Hagel to slide down to the second line and form a strong shutdown pair with Cirelli and sort of hide Steven Stamkos, who is Tavares but worse. I'm just saying, it's also a big problem with the Lightning, mm-hmm. and no one brings it up quite as much. Regardless,
do you remember? Do you remember, like, it was the season before last when we were like, is this the cliff for Steven Stamkos? Like, is he done as like a really good 5-on-5 player? And it was not when we said that, right? It was not when we brought it up. He still put together a pretty impressive run, but I don't know.
He's maybe, also produced Tavares, which kind of like probably shields over.
Yeah,
some but of like, the
defensively
issue.
Is a lot.
Yeah, but who cares?
Who cares about
Vasilevsky back there? Who cares?
Yeah, who cares about 899 Vasilevsky this year? The defense hasn't fine. Mattered. That is their actual biggest problem. Is
yep.
After Hedman, you have Darren Radish, Nick Perbix, Eric Cernak is good, Hayden Fleury, Matt Dumba, some other guys I can't remember. It's bad. It's really
totally.
Bad.
Totally.
And Hedman, I think, has taken on a lot of tough minutes this year, and this team just doesn't have the defensive ability it once did. And it's so much more top heavy than previous version of Lightning, but they have that winning pedigree. It's the Lightning. I'd still be a little afraid to face them the first round. They're just, their depth is really sketchy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Of all these dark horse contenders, is there one team that you guys like the most?
The Canucks. Without a doubt.
It's unfair. I'm waving. I'm
not why
in the discussion.
They're a dark horse contender. We just talked about them as
on
one.
Our list.
On, answer the question.
No, on our list, it's Vancouver for sure.
Thank you.
He wanted to say the Leafs. Big Leafs guy.
I never want to say the Leafs.
Yeah.
That's why you didn't want to say it. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there like, I don't want to say it. We know who you're talking about.
It's Vancouver.
Yeah, and I think if it isn't clear after this hour-long conversation, the Canucks are a dark horse in this conversation because we only picked two teams per division, and Vegas kind of got the tie break, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. they got screwed by the system.
That sucks. Take it up with the system. I don't
know.
Take it
up with the judge.
We're all trying to find out who did this. Take it up with the judge. I'm going to watch I Think You Should Leave later, I think.
Great call.
Make a little cup of tea and watch my little show and try to kick this fever. It's great. I think a final thought maybe from Dom, because we need to wrap up the show, but Dom did have a really interesting update to his model and like new project just came out today. And it was looking at usage. And as we just kind of had the discussion about usage with some of these players, Victor Hedman, et cetera, this is interesting because we can now look at through Dom's model, like how players on each team are being utilized in terms of their minutes, their matchups, easy defense, easy offense, and vice versa. Dom, what can you tell us about this update that you've made to the model and your story that posted today with all of the, it's not team depth charts, but it's like the team usage charts, which is like very fun to take a scroll through.
Yeah, they weren't as fun to put together because I had to do it all manually. So that sucked. But yeah, when I changed my model last year to split it up to offense and defense, this is something I had in mind the whole time, is that in terms of usage, I don't think we want to look at quality of competition as a player's total value. We want to look at it as an offensive and defensive perspective, because there's a lot of shutdown defensemen who aren't good offensively and they won't show up as well in that kind of number. And I think for the last decade or so, a lot of analysts have pretended that quality of competition is not real or not important or trivial. And it's because the tools we had to use it to measure it were just not very good. If you look at Sider, who was the big example from the piece, his competition plays 1 minute more on average than Shane Gostisbehere. And so when you look at that, you're like, oh, that doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. The difference between a 14-minute and a 13-minute player is nothing. But when you have a better measure of quality, you have a better understanding of what the competition is. And the other big thing is the effect size was even bigger than the range. So someone facing tough minutes is an even more difficult task than what the actual tough minutes are. So if the average offensive rating is 2, the effect on your defensive rating might be like -3. Like, it's that sort of thing. And I think I was just frustrated with my own model and other models as well, seeing third pair defensemen who I knew were getting softer minutes come out looking stronger than they should have. And that was the biggest issue that I think I wanted to fix. And I wanted to push the conversation forward for a lot of people in the space and give a much needed credit to former Athletic employee Tyler Dello, who fought the Julius Honka Wars very vigorously 4 years ago and can be vindicated today.
Grandpa, what did you do in the Honka Wars? I mean, that's always been one of my biggest pet peeves, absolutely. Is like, everyone loves a good third pair guy who can produce in the minutes that he's given, but the presupposition can't be that he's going to succeed when his role changes, right? Like, I think that's just, I think what you've done adds a layer of context that was missing. So
yeah, and like, thanks. The other thing is the, like, last year I made the decision to not look at things on a per 60 rate, because in that way you assume someone scoring 2 points per 60 on the third line can do that on the first line on his own accord. And it's the same with allowing fewer expected goals against on the third line per 60. You seem great, but play 20 minutes, and that might not be the case. So when you look at quality from that perspective, you see, I guess, larger gaps in the player's face because it's not just a per 60 basis, it's their actual total value.
I think it's interesting. It's a great update. And again, that story posted on The Athletic this morning. And yeah, all the charts are, yes, they were hard to do, but they're great and they're fun to scroll through. I think the Canes.
When charts are hard to do, I know.
There was only one spelling mistake. I think I'm pretty proud of that. There were like 600 names. That's pretty good.
That's amazing. Good job. I think the Canes chart is the funniest because everyone's just kind of clustered in the middle. Everyone just has the same deployment, I guess.
Did you miss Tony D'Angelo all the way up at the top?
The Canes forwards.
Brendan Lemieux?
Well, him too, but the Canes forwards are just very clustered in the middle, except for those two outliers.
The exception proves the rule. That's the pretty much definition of that saying.
But thanks, Dom, for joining us. This was fun. We'll see how our contenders and dark horses play out, and we'll see kind of how the standings maybe change or stay the exact same.
We've all but lined up a Flyers Capitals
love it
cup. That is what's happening. One of those teams is winning the cup. I hope it's the Flyers. I really do. No one thought they would be here, honestly. That was a rebuilding good team. They're like, we're fine. We're going to just win games.
I can appreciate that they didn't like start, you know, buying like they were true contenders at the deadline too. Like I know the Drysdale move happened, but that wasn't like giving up
a bunch of stuff. Like, worked, I think.
I appreciate the way that they've approached all of this. So yeah,
I like
buyers at the end of the day.
I like that their one acquisition as a buyer was someone that made the team worse, which is Eric Johnson. It's just like a sneaky ad to be like, we still kind of want to rebuild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but also a guy who like the locker room be like, hey, yeah, we got, come on. This is good. They replaced, you know, Sean Walker in one way or another. I'm like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. They still believe in us. Gotcha.
Go team. Yeah. So I think the one takeaway from today's show is go Flyers. That's kind of everything that we've discussed. Ryan Johansson, is he still in the American League? Doesn't look like he's played a game for the Flyers.
I think he's just on sabbatical.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Well, that's the end of this week's Athletic Hockey Show. Oh, he's injured. Thanks, Jeff. Wow. Oh, yeah. I missed that. Forgot about that. You can just cut that from the show if you don't want to make me look stupid or leave it in. It's fine. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show. Please leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you're enjoying the show, the next Athletic Hockey Show is Friday, the Prospect Series with Max Boltman, who's like miraculously just back and available to record. Weird. And Scott Wheeler, the guy, has Max turned into Craig Custance? He just like doesn't show up for work.
That's been his destiny since day one. I've known him a long time.
The slowly morphing into Craig has begun. On the Friday show, the guys are going to discuss Scott's latest 2024 draft ranking and his too early 2025 draft ranking. So if you're interested in that, that's coming out on Friday. Thanks everyone again for listening. Thanks, Dom. Thanks, Sean, I guess. This is your job, so thanks for being here. Thanks, everyone.